Alrighty, good morning everybody and welcome to Exploration 1, Module 7. Now the first thing I want to ask is, are there any questions on the material that we have covered so far? Is everybody fairly cool with the material we've covered so far apart from the binary stuff? And I'll also take questions on the binary stuff as well. Okay. Silence. I will assume that there are no questions. I did notice, if anybody's been playing with the remote bundle, that workstation 1 and 2 had their link down, so you couldn't actually ping the routers from the workstations. Guys, if that's the case, you really need to log in there and do a sudo su, provide cavi as the password, and run ftool space dash I space eth 0 and find out whether the link is up or not. If the link isn't up, I need to know because I need to power cycle the virtual machines. There is a bug where if the switches don't come up in time and the virtual machines come up first and the virtual machine sees no link, it will actually have an Ethernet interface that's configurable that appears to have no cable connected. So that one bit us all yesterday. Unfortunately, to fix that, I need to tear the remote bundle to pieces, and I can't see any of you being happy with me for doing that, although I may actually need to take the setup down for a week and actually resolve the problems once and for all, which I concede will be inconvenient. But hopefully when I'm done, it should be a lot better. I can probably stagger it out and do it pod by pod, which means that the whole bundle won't be down. It just means that when I go and do the different pods, there'll be a week where pod 3 is down, or a week where pod 2 is down, or a week where pod 1 is down. Alright, well let's get this binary stuff out of the way before we get on to other things, so that everybody can be as fresh and the little hamsters can be running at top speed. So, let us consider closing a couple of windows. Don't need that. Okay. If you're not in chat, you want to be in chat. I want to convert the number 86 into binary. Now, do I pick on somebody and see if they can tell me how to do it, or do we all work through it together? All right, we have the number 86. Can anybody tell me what's the first thing we need to do?
Steve, sorry.
Yes.
I told you I'm tired. I was meaning to type Steve into the chat window, but apparently right. Spoke into the... Anyway.
That's all right. It's okay.
So we'll figure out that six... Yeah. So the highest number that goes in is 64. If we go to 128, it won't work. So we pad with zeros and have the one for the 64. So we start off with 01. Then we minus 64.
Yes, I'm happy with that. Yep, which
then
24,
we get,
84, 22.
22, yeah. 16 does go into 22, so we put another 1.
No, stop.
Oh, wait.
No, you've botched
one,
it.
Didn't I?
Yep.
32,
yeah.
I meant.
So, you've got 22 left, and you can't take 32 off, so what do you do?
You put a 0.
Yes, you're doing well.
Then
now you
we
go back to where you were.
16.
You've got 22 left. Mm-hmm. Yep, and you can take 16 off 22.
And that does go in, so we put the 1.
Yep.
And that leaves us with
16
left.
From 22. 6, okay, yep. So what's the next one we do then?
16 from 22 leaves 6. We have 8, which doesn't go, so 0.
Yeah, that's correct.
We have 4, which does go, so we have the 1.
Yeah, that's correct.
We have 2, which does go,
which
so we have another
go.
1.
Yep.
We have 1, which does not go anymore, because 2 minus 2 is 0, so we have 0.
That is correct, and we are left with 0101010. That's what my braille says. Hang on, I'm just going to drop my silence time, it's annoying me. Alrighty. So, to be honest with you, Steve, that was a really good job. You did really, really well. Apart from missing one of the powers, that was awesomely done. I'd be very proud of yourself.
Oh, thanks.
Does somebody else want to try another one? Does anybody else want to try one? And you don't have to be in the class to try it. If you want to try one yourself, I'll take anybody who wants to try one. I'm sure Charlene would, but her connection's too unstable. All right, let's say, for example, convert 207 to binary. All right, do you want to have a shot at this one, Mike? Or is your microphone not behaving itself?
Yeah, just a little.
All right. Well, I'll work through this example. If we've only got one vocal student, interactivity is going to be somewhat of a challenge. So,
I can stay vocal as much as I need.
Ah, you are now vocal, except your connection is a little bit unstable. We're converting 207 into binary. Do you want to have a go at that?
Sure, give me 1 second.
No, it's okay. It's all right. And even if you listen along with this, Monica, it's good practice for next week, because I'm sure Brian will be doing this. Well, probably doing a similar method to me next week.
Yes, I will.
All right. Well, I'm going to make a bit of a start on this. I'm going to at least do the first one. 207 minus 128. That's
okay,
why.
I have an answer.
Oh, you have an answer. All right. Well, I'm going to quickly whip through it, and we'll see if your answer matches my answer, because your connection's unstable. So, 128 from 207, so that's... how am I going to do this? 207, 171, thank you, so put a 1.
79, sorry.
79, yeah, that would be... yeah, that's right. So we've got 79 left, so we put a 1 down for the 128, we then put a 1 for the 64, because we've got 71, we then go to, we've got 7 left, so we put, yes it is,
left.
You said 71, so 64 to 70 is 6 plus 1 is 7. Yep, no, that's good. That's fine. Yep. So we've got 7 left, so we put a 0 for the 16, we put a 0 for the 8, we've got 7, which is 421, so we put 111. Did you get 1100111, Charlene?
Actually, I got 1100111.
You
only got 7
bits. That would be 01100111. Well, let's cross... Let's check. 1 and 2 is 3, and 4 is 7, and 0 is 7, and 0 is 7, and 64 is 71? Yes, plus 128. 71 plus 128... Ah, we got it wrong, Steve. We need to be a little more careful. I will take most of the responsibility for that. We started with 207, so I'm tempted to go with Charlene's answer. All right, I'm going to be tedious and do it again, because I should get this right. 207, we've got a 128, so we put a 1 down. Calculator, because I'm lazier, 207 minus 128. I have 79 left. All right. So I have a 1 for the 128. I have a 1 for the 64. Which is what you originally said 79, and I managed to botch it, so that was my fault. So that takes us to 192. We now have 64, 74. We have 15 left. So we have a 0 for the 32. We have a 0 for the Steen. And we have 15, which is 1111. So I get 0110011111. It's alright, I'm about to back check it. Okay, let me back check this. Alright, we have 1 and 2 is 3, and 4 is 7, and 8 is 15. And 0 and 0 and 64, 64 and 15 is 79, yes, plus 128 should give us 207. That works on my calculator.
Yep.
All right. Now, because I've gone through the runaround of the other ones, can everybody see how... I'm going to have to drop that sensitivity down by a smidge. Can everybody see how Okay, can everybody see how we add the powers of 2 together to check our answer? And if all of the powers of 2 we add together actually get us to the number we want, we know that we have actually successfully got the conversion correct. Is everybody cool with that process?
Cool with the process, but have a logistics question.
Well, absolutely. What logistics question would you like to ask?
So, when sitting there for the exam, and you can't have a calculator, are you allowed to have a brailler, or how do you... I'm just curious what method you use for essentially scrap papering this out.
You have pieces of paper and somebody with a pencil, and you tell somebody what to write down. And they can read you back what you wrote down.
Perfect, okay.
We are working... Sorry, go ahead. That is really odd. I think you have something with your wireless at home. So I don't think it's all the internet connections. Okay. We'll have to try and debug that, because it seems as though you've got a problem with your internet connection, or at least the wireless link to your wireless router, not actually your internet connection. So, we'll look into that. All right. So that is the binary conversion. Now... I think there is actually one question on hexadecimal in the exam, I was told, so I'm actually going to have to cover the hexadecimal conversion. Now, hexadecimal is what we call base 16. For the first 10 symbols, we use 0 through 9. For the next 6 symbols, we use A through F. A is worth 10, B is worth 11, C is worth 12, D is worth 13, E is worth 14, and F is worth 15. Is everybody cool with that bit so far? So basically, the whole point of hexadecimal is that if you look at the way hexadecimal is structured, and hexadecimal is in base 16, each 16 portion is actually worth 4 binary bits. 0 to 15 gives you 4 binary bits. If we convert 15 into binary, we have 8 plus 4 plus 2 plus 1, which gets us to 15. So basically what you do is you take each 4 bits of binary, convert it into a symbol, and then once you've done the entire conversion, you end up with a hexadecimal number. So let's take an example, because I think an example is probably a good idea. If we have, and I'll talk this out in case you're not in chat, 1111 0011. Okay, so where's my notepad document? Okay, so we have 1111 0011. Okay, so what we do is we look at the it's probably best to work from right to left. We look at the 0011 and we convert that into decimal. Can anybody tell me what number that would be in decimal? 0011. Yep, you're absolutely correct. And can somebody else, Steve, can you tell me what 1111 would be in decimal, which you need to write to the left of that 3?
Hold on.
No, it's okay. There is no hurry. You now have 2 minutes to solve this if necessary. 1111 in binary, what would that be in decimal?
240?
Technically you're correct. However, what I wanted was just 00001111 converted. So I just wanted you to add 1, 2, 4, and 8.
15.
Okie dokie. And what symbol did we say 15 was worth?
E.
No, it's F. 10 is A, 11 is B, 12 is C, 13 is D, 14 is E, 15 is F. So what we end up with is F3 for our hex number. So what I've actually done is I've broken the binary conversion into two nibbles. I've converted each nibble independently into a symbol. And basically what I have ended up with is 15 times 16 plus 3 will give us the number that we had up the top, which was 11110011. I think I can foresee an exercise for you all in my future.
So you just look at each 4 independent of all of the other 4? Other bits, I mean?
Yes. Yes, you just look at each 4 in work from the right. You'll get the result backwards. But you've got to work from the right unless you know how many bits there are and can handle that. You just work from the right and look at each nibble, which is what we call half a byte. And you look at the 4 and you convert it. You look at the next 4 across. You convert it. You look at the next 4 across. You convert it. If you've only got 1 or 2 left, you zero pad the left hand side and convert that, and then you just write the symbols down. If you do it this way, you'll get the symbols round the wrong way because you'll be working from right to left. Just reverse the symbols and you've got your answer in hexadecimal. Yes, that's correct. Yeah, and I've got some ideas on your wireless problem later too. So I'll IM you and we'll see if there are some settings you can tweak to make that behave itself a little bit better, because I have a plan. Alrighty, did you follow along with that, Mike, or did I go a bit fast? Alright, well what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through some of the material I've got here in the notes, and I'm going to talk about that for the time I've got left, and then I will take any questions, queries that arise from any of this stuff after that, and if you could please try and get your microphone working by next week, that would be awesome. That would make me very happy. Okay, so we finished up talking last week or the week before about window size, and we talked about the selective acknowledgements, and we talked about the way that you could have a number of packets in flight at any one given time, and the window would allow you to have a certain number of packets outstanding before they were acknowledged. And the idea of windowing was to deal with links that had a high turnaround delay, like Charlene's wireless internet. No, I just couldn't let that go. A satellite link. Well, we've got satellite links that have like a 1.5 second turnaround delay. So the windowing allows you to have, say, 10, 15, 20 packets in flight, but then you can start acknowledging the packets as you receive them, and then the window will slide along. So if you send packets 1 through 10, and then you wait for acknowledgements, those packets are sending, you get an acknowledgement for packets 1, 2, 3, and 4, you can then slide the window up and send packets 11, 12, 13, 14. You then wait for an acknowledgement for packet 5, and you can send packet 15. Does everybody kinda follow how that works? I will take your silence as a no. Nobody nobody cares about TTL in this particular scenario. TTL is a mechanism for preventing loops. So basically what happens is each time a packet travels through a router, the TTL is decremented by one. So in our windowing analogy, nobody cares what the TTL is. We're just caring about how many packets are actually out on the wire unacknowledged. We start caring about TTL when we look at how many hops the stuff has gone through. And I don't know whether anybody's noticed, but I think it's still the case. The number of hops on Traceroute is 30 by default. Has everybody seen that?
Yes.
And in fact, you'll notice that if you go back to like Windows 95, the TTL defaults to 32, which means that things can only be 32 hops away before the packets get discarded due to being too far beyond the TTL. And then if you look at newer operating systems, the TTL has been up to 64 or 128. And in fact, you can find out what the TTL is by pinging something. So if I ping 127.0.0.1 with 64 bytes of data, I get reply from 127.0.0.1, bytes equals 64, TTL equals 128. Because I'm pinging my local host, I'm not going through any routers. I'm not traveling any hops. I'm not handing the packets on to something else. So I will get a TTL of 128. If I ping, say my default gateway, 192.168.100.13, pinging 192.168.100.113, reply, that's still a TTL of 64 because I haven't gone through any routers. But if I ping www.gots.net, we are going to get back, I get a TTL of 56. So that means that GOTS 1 is 8 hops away. So if I trace route, trace RT, www.gots.net, just waiting for the trace route to finish. And I've discovered that that's actually 9 hops away because the TTL is decremented by 1 when it goes through my router. It doesn't actually get decremented by the time it goes from my machine. So when the packet leaves my machine, it travels through the local router here. It gets decremented by 1. It then goes to DIP 202 dot blah 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 dot Westnet, it gets decremented by 1. 10.99.99.5. You can see that the ISPs are actually using non-routable IP addresses inside their networks to conserve on publicly routable IP addresses. Because the stuff is inside their infrastructure, the networks don't actually need to be publicly routable if you're handing stuff around inside a network. So the only place you actually need public routable IP addresses is on the border of your LANs where they connect to the internet. Does that clear up what TTL does, maybe?
It does. I don't want to sidetrack the conversation from Windows. I don't get why it's decrementing. I would think it would need a longer time to live as it needs to go through more routers, but I think I understand the difference.
That's not sidetracking the conversation. That's a perfectly valid discussion point for exploration. So you're wondering why the TTL is decremented?
Well, I am, yeah.
Well, that's fine. That's a perfectly legitimate question. The fact is that the time to live says how many hops the packet can live for. So you start at, say, 64. And then when you hit the next router, you go 63. And then when you hit the next router, you go 62. And then you hit the next router, you go 61. And then eventually, you get to... you have a TTL of 1. And then you reduce that to 0. And once you've reduced it to 0, you've found a loop. Now, let's take an example. Let's say we have a routing loop configured, okay? And we'll just make this really easy, and we've got the TTL set to 10. The TTL starting at 10, okay? So let's say that you send a packet to router 1, which sends it to router 2, which sends it to router 1, which sends it to router 2, which sends it to router 1, etc., okay? So your packet goes to router 1 with a TTL of 10. It decremented to 9. It gets decremented to 9. It goes to router 2. It has a TTL of 9. It gets to 8. It goes to router 1. It gets a TTL of 7. It goes to router 2. It gets a TTL of 6. It goes to router 1. It gets a TTL of 5. It goes to router 2. It gets a TTL of 4. It goes to router 1, which gets a TTL of 3. It goes to router 2, which gets a TTL of 2. It goes to router 1, which gets a TTL of 1. It then gets a time exceeded message sent back. In other words, there were 10 loops, and then the packet was killed dead because the TTL expired. Otherwise, the packets would go round and round forever.
Ah, okay, so this has nothing to do with time. In other words, it's not like a millisecond value. It's a attempt, really, not time.
Yeah, it's the time is measured in the number of hops. It's not time as in how many seconds. It's time as in how many hops. In other words, how long, holistically speaking, should the packet exist on the network after traveling through this many routers? Now, how traceroute works, and this really isn't in your notes, but I'm going to mention it anyway, right? So how traceroute works is it sends out a packet with a TTL of 1, okay, to your nearest router. It sends it out with 0 to the nearest router, and it's decremented by 1, and your nearest router sends back a time exceeded message. Bang, that's your first hop. It then sends out a TTL of 1. It travels through your first router, it gets to the second router. A time exceeded message is sent back. That's your second hop. Then it sends out a packet with a TTL of 3. That gets decremented, goes through the first, second, and third routers, and then a time exceeded message gets sent out. And it keeps incrementing the TTL in the packets that it sends out, looking for the replies to come back, until the traceroute stops. And that is actually how traceroute functions. Is that a little bit clearer to everyone?
Yep.
Alright, well, what I would strongly recommend is, if you are interested in this, pull up the Traceroute Man page from DWWW and have a look, because it's actually quite instructional and explains how these things work. Now, going on to the other notes I've got here, the network PDU is called a packet, and this is what exists at the network layer. Packets have source and destination addresses. These addresses generally do not change. They stay the same regardless of how the packets are sent along. It's a bit like when you send a letter through the postal system. You don't change the to and from address on the letter. The routing takes care of routing the letter through the mail system, but you don't actually change the addresses on the letter as it travels. Packets are routed at the network layer, and devices called routers actually perform the routing. Each router a packet passes through is called a hop. That's why it says 30 hops max, 20 hops max, 60 hops max when you do a trace route. IPv4 does the following, according to my notes. It's connectionless. It just sends the packets. There's no actual connection before the packets are sent. They try to send the packets, but they don't guarantee it's actually going to happen. The medium is independent, so it operates independently from what the media is. So it can be fibre, copper, whatever. The packets are pretty much the same in IPv4. And the largest packet the media can take sets the maximum transmission unit, or MTU. That means that your largest packet is governed by the hardware that you're using. Anybody know what is the default MTU on Ethernet, generally speaking? Nope. 1500 is the answer you want. 1500 bytes is the MTU for regular Ethernet. And then you can use jumbo frames, which give you bigger MTUs and can reduce overhead. That's often done on gigabit networks because the data is traveling so fast you don't want so much overhead on it. You want to maximize your throughput. Although if you are going to use jumbo frames, all bits of equipment need to actually support those jumbo frames. There's another field in the IP datagram called the type of service. It is advisory. Routers are supposed to take advantage of it. It's not foolproof, but it does actually set the priority of packets. So you can have things like high delay or high reliability or different class systems. But it's only advisory, and there's nothing that says that the routers upstream for you are going to take any notice of your TOS field, because all bits of peer-to-peer software set the TOS to high speed, high delivery, and shovel out your data. IP does have header checksum, and that's to make sure that the header is not corrupted. Any questions on all that? That was basically the network layer. No, window size and frame size are not the same. Frame size, remember, frame size is at layer 2, which is the data link layer. Window size is at layer 4, which is the transport layer. So you have frame size at layer 2, you have packet size at layer 3, and you have window size at layer 4, which can be a certain number of packets. Alright guys, well, I'm going to stop there for this week. I'm going to continue on when we can get a little bit more interactivity. And that's pretty much the module for this week. So I hope you all got something out of it. Any pending questions before I hit stop? It's all right. We'll resolve it at some point, I'm sure.